Hello, adventurer. Searching for your next epic journey? Perhaps in a far-off land made of paper? In Paper Mario, The Thousand-Year Door, join Mario on a quest to recover the Crystal Stars. Take on enemies in turn-based RPG battles. Get cursed with abilities that unleash your paper power. And you might meet some interesting folks. Paper Mario, The Thousand-Year Door, available May 23rd. Game rated E for everyone.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Hello and welcome to the Managing Midget Podcast. It is Tuesday, April 23rd. The dust has settled a little bit. We are coming down from the emotional high on what was an incredible week, capped off in the most incredible way by Jude freaking Bellingham putting a sword through Barcelona's hearts. Madridistas are happy. I'm happy. Everyone around the world is happy. Leah Ravel is here. She's happy. Leah, and right now we're just kind of sitting back and Barcelona's imploding. They're throwing tantrums. They're crying. We're just sitting back and kind of basking away in the sunshine. It's beautiful right now.
I don't know if we have come down yet from the high, to be honest. Two tantrums in 1 week? That's crazy.
So I was thinking about where to start with this podcast, because I know that you've been, I don't always interact, but I see your tweets, like, you know, I know that you're having a lot of fun on Twitter. I know that you've probably been active on Twitch. I was thinking we start from the beginning, and I want to take us all the way back to actually when the draw was made, when we drew City. And then we saw the other side of the bracket and started feeling a little bit envious. And we were like, what? Barca have to play PSG and then Atletico. And then they just randomly, after being bad all season, could possibly just put themselves in the Champions League final. Well, we have to play against City. What is this?
Yeah.
So do you remember feeling what you felt back then? And like, did you see this kind of outcome of like perfect scenario, like unfolding for us?
I mean, so here's the thing. As you know, I'm also in Canada, as are you. So the draw happens when we're typically still asleep. So I woke up and I saw on Twitter that it was City. And I was like, oh my God, this is like worst case. This is as bad as it could get. You know what I mean? Everyone that it could be, of course, we get City for like the millionth time in a row. But then, yeah, after our performance against Leipzig, I was, you know, still... It wasn't difficult per se, but perhaps more difficult than it should have been. Yeah. Leipzig are an underrated side too. But then, yeah, I don't know. I think what I will say is that this year I was significantly less stressed and significantly less nervous than last year. Like I just, and it's funny because I was at a Premier League in March. And I remember saying to all the people there, Premier League fans, shock, saying, no, Madrid's going through. Like, we're stronger this year, and we have Bellingham. City are a little bit weaker. De Bruyne is off and on with injury. Like, when their midfield is not, like, functioning as, like, a well-oiled machine, Haaland's quiet. And they're like, no, you're insane. And I was like, no, mark my words. And no, you're telling me blah, 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 blah. And so, yeah, I just remember going into it with, like, after the drive, I remember being stressed, frustrated that like everyone else gets such an easy, especially it's not like it was a balanced bracket. Like this side of the bracket is hard and that side of the bracket was much less difficult. But then yeah, over the course of the next several weeks after that, I just remember being like strangely comforted with the tie. Like I didn't, I was nervous, of course, but I didn't have that like butterfly, like, oh my God, I'm so stressed. Like, what are we gonna, you know what I mean? I just had this like weird aura of confidence in the team and getting it done. And I think it's because the way that things have progressed this year, Friendship FC just keeps getting stronger. You know what I mean? And I don't know, they were confident, so I was confident. I just, that was the vibe.
That was my feeling too. And then all of that calmness went away, like when we were hitting, like when De Bruyne scored in the Etihad. Like,
yeah, in like the
70s. I was like,
minutes.
Okay, yeah, I don't know how I feel anymore. I'm just like hyperventilating.
Yeah.
I'm shaking.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think actually your take was a very reasonable take. Obviously, no matter what the situation of Real Madrid in the Premier League fans are going to have their preconceived biases of how good Real Madrid are, right? And of course, you know, you and I and everyone else who's Madridista obviously watches Real Madrid play every single game. That is not the case with people in England. Mm-hmm. They see us on the big night here and there, and they obviously see Manchester City and Liverpool and Arsenal, whoever, every single week. So they don't know, even if we are really like truly incredible, and they don't necessarily know that. But I think your feeling was correct. It was, at the time, City were not playing as well as they were last season. They had those health problems. Mm-hmm. They got players like back in time, just in time for us, like Grealish in the first leg. Walker eventually made it for the second leg. And we are, like you said, much better than last season. Last year, we had a lot of weird things happening at that time. Benzema was not playing well. We had injuries. Tchouameni was not playing the second leg. Rudiger was not playing the second leg. Mendy was out. Mendy was a huge factor this year.
All
those things, right? So your feeling was correct, in my opinion. Now, like, it was still going to be difficult, and it was. Obviously, incredibly difficult. What about the other side of the bracket? Did you think about that side of the bracket at all? Like, with what was going on with Barca, PSG, Atletico, Dortmund?
Yes and no. I think the most that I thought about that side of the bracket was, like, that's who we're playing in the final. Like, we're playing one of those in the final. If we make it past City, like, we're winning the Champions League. And that's just, I think that's the preconceived notion that every Madrid fan has, and every football fan, to be honest. Obviously, anything can happen. Bayern's a hard tie. Like, the final will be difficult as well. But I think that compared to City and the level of which they are in comparison to the other sides, I think that that was my thought. I mean, I saw, always, generally speaking, my prediction was PSG would beat Barca. But Atletico Madrid and Dortmund, I wasn't sure, because tournament football, you know, if Atletico Madrid just play their low block, as they always do, then, you know, maybe Dortmund would stay quiet and wouldn't be able to, like, penetrate in behind. And yeah, I was surprised, happy. That neither of them went through, but surprised a little bit. But yeah, I think the only thing was, we're playing one of these teams in the final, and that's kind of all that I kept thinking.
That's the optimistic outlook that I was trying to look at too. Is that to me, City and Real Madrid were the best two teams in the tournament.
Yeah.
To me, it was the final. And of course, football is not that straightforward. You know, we could go on to lose to Bayern. City could have gone on to lose to Bayern, or Arsenal, whoever was going to qualify. It ended up being Bayern.
Yeah.
But to me, whoever made it out of City versus Real had a good chance to put themselves into the championship game and win that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, I kind of thought of both scenarios. My worst case scenario was, I was throwing this to Diego Lorin, who works for Barca. I was like, what do you think, man? Real Madrid lose to Mallorca. They lose Clásico. All of a sudden, the La Liga race is back on. You guys beat PSG. We lose to City. All of a sudden, everything's turned around. And of course, like, all these things were going through my head. But then everything happened the opposite way. And if, like, could you have scripted it any better for us? Like, not just the fact that we advance and we beat Barca. It's just the way everything happened. It's the way Barca lost to PSG, the comeback with Mbappe killing them, and then we beat City in a penalty shootout, and then we didn't beat Barca. We didn't just beat Barca. We beat them in the last second with Jude Bellingham again. I couldn't have scripted it better. It was scripted perfectly. Yeah. That's why it almost seemed a little bit surreal by the end of it.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think it was the same goal, by the way, that PSG scored yes. against Barca, that we scored against them in the 90th as well.
Cancelo taking a nap.
Yeah, shock. But yeah, no, I think that it really could, like, football won heavily this week in every aspect. I think everyone was very loud. Barca fans were very loud. City fans were very loud. Barca fans still loud. Were loud when they still loud always. Atletico Madrid fans, you know what I mean? And I think that the humbling took place where it should have taken place, you know? But yeah, no, I think it's good for us. I'm not sure that it's the same thing with Clasicos. Like, anything, you know, Barca can be so bad all season, and then when it comes to a Clasico, randomly they just like ignite their long lost passion that they once had for the game, and it's like they've been playing, you know what I mean? It's always difficult. And so I wasn't sure, like, there's always, like I said, with tournament football, it's two games, like anything can happen. You just low block, a penalty, a red card, whatever. And like Barca in against PSG. And that was a difference maker for them also. So yeah, no, I don't think it could have been scripted any better. It was, yeah, football won this week.
So the first leg happened, and I guess I'm now just kind of fast forwarding to the actual week, which could have been the week from hell or the week yeah. of dreams, right? How are you feeling heading into the second leg after what you saw in the first leg?
I think still this, like, still confident. Obviously, like, not being at home in the second leg was concerning, not ideal. Like, it would have been better to be at home. And going into the second leg tied, like with a draw, is it's nil-nil, you know what I mean? Anything can happen again. And like we had talked about last week, it could have been the best week of our lives or it could have been the worst. And I was happy though with the way that we played at the Bernabeu, like in the first leg. I think that we went into that game, especially at the beginning, strong, hungry, like we were pressing, we were really good in transition, we were attacking, defending well. Like, the way that we set up for that game actually was not what I expected at all. I expected our setup in the first leg to be more of what we did in the second leg. And it was not. So I was happy with that. Three goals against City at home. I don't think people expected that. And by people, I mean mostly Premier League fans. But City especially, I don't think they expected us to be as aggressive, as attacking as we were. So yeah, I was happy after that performance. I obviously would have preferred not to concede the goals that we did, but some of them, like Foden's goal was, you know, a worldie. Guardiola's goal was a worldie. So those, you know, are one-off little mistakes that mostly couldn't be prevented. Obviously could be prevented, but hard to prevent. So yeah, comforted with the performance going into the second leg. And then we scored early. So after like 5 minutes, I was like, okay, well, cool. GG.
Were you on Twitch at any point during that game? Like, were you doing any live reactions?
Yeah, I was on CBS Golazo actually. Okay. For both legs. And it's weird actually being in like a more professional environment. I would, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
because I don't want to be a hater live on air. But also, like, if we lose and I'm live on air on CBS, like I would be like very, very upset. Hard to interview, I would say. So, yeah, in the first leg, I was happy. Even before the game, they had asked me, like, what do you think? What are your predictions? And I said, well, like, we're Real Madrid. I don't know if you saw the clip for the second leg as well. They said, what are your predictions? Blah, blah, blah. And I said,
can we bring it up? Can we share the screen here? Like, is it easy to access?
Yeah. Let me find it on Twitter.
So are you're trying to be neutral here, like on these things? Or like, do people openly know you're a Madridista?
No. People openly knew I was a Madrid fan. I threw some shade at City as well. But there's some level of like concerned because I don't want to be, you know, if we lose, like I said, and I'm live on air, like, I don't want to answer questions about the defeat that we just got, you know what I mean? That we just had. I just linked it to you on Twitter.
Okay. Yeah, we'll bring it up. Like, I'd be curious because, like, I'm not, I've never really watched, I mean, I've never watched a reaction thing live, but I enjoy, if a clip comes across my way, I enjoy watching them. Like,
Yeah.
Did you see all, like, the Kun Aguero ones?
Yeah, I did.
Those are amazing.
Amazing.
I don't know if there were any other ones actually, but that's the one where it's like, you know, you really enjoy Kun Aguero just melting down.
Yeah, always.
We'll always watch that. All right. We'll bring this up. So let me see if I can do a quick. Yeah, I think it's going to be pretty seamless. Let me bring this up. Can you hear it?
Optimistic about their chances today. How are you? What about hearing from our Real Madrid correspondent, our friend Leah, to join us now? Leah, Manchester City fans feeling quite optimistic about their chances today. How are you feeling?
You know what? I'm surprised to see so many Manchester City fans in one place. I didn't think they had very many, but I'm feeling confident.
All right. So, Leah, talk to us about your expectations for this. We've talked about it already a little bit on the show, referencing last year, losing 4-0 at the Etihad. How do you think Madrid rectifies it? What would you like to see different, given what happened last year?
Listen, it's happened before. We lost 4-0 against Barcelona once. We came back. We won 4-0. You know what I mean? It happens. But at the end of the day, we're Real Madrid, and we have 14, and they have one. So we have the experience. We have, like Rella said, we have the friendship, and I think that the camaraderie in a team goes a long way as well. And in 2022, when we were down, it was that kind of like momentum and motivation and like passion almost that propelled us the extra step on top of the talent we inevitably have. So yeah, I'm confident. I feel a lot better this year than I do last.
Okay, so you went guns blazing, like just with a machine gun. I would have been much more diplomatic. I would have been like, yeah, well, they're a great team. You 14 champions compared to one. They have no fans. You just went all out.
I did. I had to. Like I said, City fans were so loud, especially after last year. Like, we lost 4-0 against them, and inevitably so. You know what I mean? Like, we played poorly. We had injuries, and they forgot about all the times we won against them and eliminated them from the Champions League. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Well, I honestly, like, their entire history is like 3 years old. I mean, like, I know it's not. Like, they've been around for a while. I know that. But you know what I mean, right?
I know. I got you.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the one thing is that, like, you hear a lot of things from City and Barca fans. Like, the treble is greater than, like, all of our Champions League titles because you guys have never won three in one year. Like, you know, to be quite frankly, it is impressive. You know, I'd like us to win the treble. I don't know if we ever will. It's just not in our DNA. But I'd much rather just be there for all the big tournaments and the big games and have consistency, like 12 Champions League semifinal appearances in 14 years, than to condense it all in 1 year. So I'm fine with it. You guys drink your copium. Excessive amounts of copium, man, this past week. Excessive. Really something.
The thing too is, like, I think our treble will come. I think that if we're going to win a treble, it'll be in the next 5 or so years. And then once we have a treble with a bunch of 20-year-olds that we spent significantly less money on, and on top of then 15, maybe more Champions Leagues, like, then we can talk about what's more impressive and what club is more successful. You know what I mean? Like, a treble, they won a treble. They were really great last year. Like, they deserved it. However, listen, the number just comes in my head and it's 115. I don't know why. It's just there in my head. And you do with that what you will. But I digress.
Well, this story might make you laugh, because it feeds into everything you're saying about City fans. Because I was sitting right there, like, press row. And
At the Etihad too,
At the Etihad. And in front of us were some incredibly loud City fans. which I don't necessarily know if they knew that we were Real Madrid fans, but I think they maybe got the hint, because when Rodrigo scored, we were kind of like, you know, doing fist bumps and stuff, like nothing out of control, because you can't act out of control. Inside, I was like dancing, right? But but when De Bruyne scored, one of them actually came up to our press table and started banging on it and screaming like a like an animal.
Lunatic.
And, yeah, like just going ape shit. And by the end of it, when like we all stood up and started, like some of the Spanish press were crying, like they weren't going crazy, they were just hugging and crying out of happiness. Mm-hmm. And they just lost their shit. They just started screaming, and then eventually they left. Like, you saw it, right? Like as soon as Bellingham scored, or sorry, Rudiger scored, they just left. Like, you know, like
immediately.
If there's a Champions League elimination, usually the fans like stay and be like, and like, thank you for the season, right? The players come out and they say thank you to the fans. No, like they all just, they just peaced out. Like, all right, well, our plastic club just got knocked out. We're done.
It's done. No, listen, I was at the Champions League final last year in Istanbul.
Yeah.
And as a neutral, because obviously we were knocked out.
Yeah.
And it was the Inter fans were nuts, obviously. The Italian fans are crazy. In a good way, like passionate. But the city, like, I've not heard anything like it. After just winning your very first Champions League as a club, there was no note. Like they weren't even leaving, like leaving the stadium as everyone was walking out, there was like one off people hearing like chanting or like walking, but it was like nothing. It was, and I'm not even trying to be like, this is not even banter. Like, I'm not even trying to be, it was just as an observer, as a neutral, it was like the quietest Champions League final and some of the quietest winners I've ever seen. Like, I could have a full conversation with like someone, three people beside me, and hear them clearly leaving the stadium. And I feel like if that was any other team, not even just Madrid, like if that was anyone else that just won the Champions League, let alone like even Arsenal, their fans were also irritating in the give us Real Madrid. But anyway, if they won their first Champions League, there would be you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I digress.
No, you're right on topic. Well, the thing is, so I keep forgetting to mention this in like all the podcasts I've done since, but so I was at the Etihad both last season and this season. Last season was a terrible experience for obvious reasons. This season was fantastic. But the one weird difference to me was that last year I came away thinking like, holy shit, the Etihad is underrated. They called the Etihad, like the atmosphere was incredible. Like everything they had, like the TIFO before the game, everything. This year, weirdly, there was none of that. Like there was no TIFO at all. The fans never really got into it. And it almost felt like a home game in some sense, because there were three times the amount of Real Madrid fans that there were last year. They took up a whole column in the stadium. They were singing all night. And it was just different this year. I don't know. Now the Madridistas like being more, that's cool. Like that's something you can say, like that's something tangible you measure. There's just more of them. But I don't really know why the city fans just didn't were just kind of like boring this year for whatever reason. Last year was better for them.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit, the technology platform that brings financial confidence with products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. You might have learned the recorder in school, but probably not how to navigate the financial world. Luckily, Intuit's on a mission to help with the free Intuit for Education program. It provides students with the lessons to learn essential skills, like how to build credit, file taxes, and budget. Check out their free resources at intuit.com/education.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
I feel like that's the thing, though. That's the whole idea of history. Do you know what I mean? Like Real Madrid, there were times where we didn't win things. Like we've gone seasons without winning things. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we've had bad seasons. We've had amazing seasons. But like, as a fan, you support a club. It's ironic saying this too, as a Real Madrid fan, but it's the reality. Like, you know, after La Decima, we lost in 2015 and Barcelona won the Champions League. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's seasons that after the three-peat, we didn't win until 2022, you know? So like, anyways, my point is that you support your club when you lose and you support your club when you win.
Yes.
Fortunately, we win a lot. So it's easy for both because we know we're going to win again. But I feel like, I don't know, if they just had this injection of money, they just started winning. Do you think that there's a big conversation with like money and clubs that have this, that get bought out or have this injection of money? Do you think, like, as Manchester City pre-money, regardless of the size of team or the success, like you look at like a third division club that, you know, will never play in the Champions League likely, or will never have that kind of like European success that, you know, the Real Madrids, the Barcelonas, the Bayerns, the Milans, whatever. Like, there's still a level of passion, sometimes more, for these like unsuccessful,
yes,
as a blanket statement, club. Do you think City, had they not had this injection of money, would have still potentially had more, like, I don't even know what I'm trying to say. Like, do you think that their fandom, like the Manchester City fans that were fans pre-money, would be more passionate almost if their success kind of like maintained? Or, because like bandwagoners are a real thing.
Yeah.
Real Madrid has them too, of course, but.
Well, so with that is, I think maybe a better case study would be, let's say I'm thinking of a club like Rayo Vallecano, okay? Rayo Vallecano, yeah. if they just became like insanely good one year, like there's an injection of money, they get to like the Champions mm-hmm. League final, they would be crazy, you know, win or lose, because they're yeah. already crazy. I don't they're know insane. Manchester City's yeah. history well enough to know like what it is
yeah.
to say either way, but I think maybe Newcastle is a good comp because we know Newcastle is actually kind of a yeah. big club, right? I yeah. feel like in those cases, they're going to be there no matter what. I do, yeah. like, it's really interesting to see, there's just like the trajectory of Real Madrid and also the fans that come along with, like, I know I've talked to you about this before, but how did you become Madridista again?
I started with Marcelo, actually.
Right.
And it just kind of snowballed from there. Pre-La Decima, and then it went from Marcelo to Ronaldo, and then, you know, you watch a team, you get attached. Then you a couple years where there's no Champions League, and then you watch a couple years of just, you know, consistent domestic success, like, but no Champions League. And then in 2014, you win a Champions League like that. It kind of solidifies, you know, it's in 2 to 3 years, you've seen like lows and you've seen highs. And so I feel like those moments are what makes you fall in love with a club and a team and, you know, Galactico era around then.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, I said this before, like, I don't know if anyone in our fan base will take it the wrong way. I do, in a lot of ways, feel like we are the most spoiled fan base in all of sports. Because by definition, we have to be, because no sports team wins as much. Whether yeah. in any sport, we're by far the most spoiled fan base. So mm-hmm. like, and I said this before too, that I will always pick Real Madrid to win the Champions League. Doesn't matter how bad we are or how good we are. It's just our yeah. tournament. Even if we're completely against all the odds,
yeah.
before almost every single Champions League we win, you see fans like in December, in January, February saying we have no chance. If we play like this against Mallorca, imagine what City will do to us, etc. Like that narrative, like, is every single year mm-hmm. we win the Champions League, that exists, right? And I'm just yeah. like, come on, like, guys, you got to be around a little bit longer. This is not how it works. Yeah. Having said that, if we don't win the Champions League, I can never complain. Like, it would be so shameless of us to complain, because actually it's more likely that you lose the Champions League than to win it. Like, do you know how, I know you know, it's more of like a general blanket statement, but like, do you know how difficult it is to win that tournament? Do you know how difficult it is to get to 14 Champions League semifinals, or sorry, 12 Champions League semifinals in 14 years? That isn't, nobody does that, like in any sport. Like, this is just this infinite, not infinite, but like perpetual dynasty that, like, when did it start? It started, like, you know, we had players like Cristiano Ronaldo, Benzema, Xabi Alonso, and now it's in that same run, we have Vinny and Jude and Fede Valverde and this whole crop of new young players that have just, it's like just this steady stream of success and consistency that is unparalleled. So, like, I feel like even if we just get knocked out, like, we can't really complain about it. You know what I mean?
No. Well, especially this year. And it's the same as, I think it was 2020, the COVID season with the salmon kits, like the Argyle third kit and the ugly pink.
Yeah.
Not a nice pink. But we had like 65 injuries or something insane. It's the same. Yeah. It's similar to that. You know what I mean? We started the year hit with three ACL injuries back to back to back. That alone doesn't happen. Like, that alone to a team just doesn't happen. Three. Yeah. And it just happens to be both our starting center backs and our starting goalkeeper coming off the two, like, best years of his career. And so, well, the one and a half, he was so-so by the end of last year, but still better than every other goalkeeper in Europe, you know? That doesn't happen. And then on top of that, you know, still being able to, with all of the other injuries, like we lost Camavinga for a bit, we lost Vinny twice, we lost Tchouaméni for a bit, we lost everyone at some point, you know, for some length of time. So with those injuries, still now at this point, likely winning the league, winning the Supercopa, getting, how close do we get in Copa? Not that close, but close enough in Copa del Rey, you know?
Copa del Rey, and I don't even remember, who cares?
No, who cares? We don't care about Copa del Rey here. But then getting to a Champions League semifinal again, you know, with all of those things in mind, I think is like still more than most other clubs can say. So, I think that, like you said, it's a mentality thing. I think it's just a club mentality that's different. And that's why it's the biggest and most successful club in the world. That's why every player's dream is to play for Real Madrid. That's why they're consistent in, you know, the talent they sign, in the mentality that the players have. Like, there's never really been huge, like, controversies with players at Real Madrid or with players versus managers. Like, if you look at Manchester United, the turmoil that they have in the dressing room is insane. Like,
yes.
You know, and whether that's player, manager, both, we don't really know. We have our opinions. But there's never really been controversy like that with Real Madrid. And I think it's just Perez and the club and the mentality and like the expectations of the players that the club has for them when they sign. Like, they know the expectation. Even you look at the Lucas Vazquez, we'll get to that, I'm sure. The Ardas, the Ceballos, the Nachos, even the Fedes, the ones that stayed and fought for their place. How much success you can reach if you understand that there's a hierarchy, it's Real Madrid at the end of the day, you have to fight for your place. Odegaard is an example of someone that didn't want to stay and didn't want to fight for his place, expected to get him over KCM. In his case, he got lucky. He left Arsenal, now captains them and is doing well. But yeah, I think it's just overall a mentality, like a winning mentality. And then you look at the difference between Real Madrid and Barcelona and us always talking about winning and them always talking about us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that part of it is really impressive. Just the scouting we've done, the team building we've done, everyone here right now is a character person. Like, everyone has character. Yeah. Everyone has personality. Yeah. Everyone gets along. That really matters. Mm-hmm. There's no internal implosion. And I think that's like, I'm almost, you know, it's really impressive when you don't really know when the cycle began or ended. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we had Cristiano leave. That to me marked like a clear end to a cycle, because he's the greatest player we ever had. Mm-hmm. But when, like, the following year when Cristiano left, we had that Ajax elimination. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of unclear where the direction of the team, because Kroos and Modric were getting older. I mean, now we can look back and laugh on the fact that we thought Kroos and Modric were old then.
Yeah, literally.
We really had no idea who was going to score goals. Only Benzema stepped up. Asensio and Bale did not at that time.
Yeah.
And you're like, where is this team headed? Are we headed for another curse of like round of 16 exits until we get our next superstar or whatever?
Yeah.
And that almost was such a random blip that I almost forgot about. And it's hard to say how I forgot about it so easily, because I remember being there that night too. And I was so traumatized about everything. Like, Ajax destroyed us that night. And so just to me, that the fact that we bounced back from that so quickly is really impressive. And this goes back to the scouting department, what you said about, you know, players like Vasquez and Nacho, who are just, they know their role. They're there to fight for the team. And in Vasquez's case in particular, I mean, Nacho's case too, because everyone doubted him after a poor season. He locked up Haaland.
Yeah.
I think the ultimate like goal in life would be to have just a small fraction of the confidence of Lucas Vasquez.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Don't even.
Like, what were you feeling at home watching that? Let alone what they feel on the field. You know what I mean?
It's so funny. Like, it's borderline meme potential, because it's so funny. Lucas Vasquez as a player already, actually, let me preface this by saying, like, pre-last year, it was either last year or the year before. I don't remember exactly. But when he came in, no, it must've been last year, because Carvajal had his like continuous stint of injuries last year. And so Lucas Vasquez was playing right back consistently. And pre that, I was like, not a Vasquez hater, but like, okay, he's just there. You know what I mean? He sometimes like, one out of every four crosses into the box are accurate. You know what I mean? I was kind of, whatever. But then when he stepped in and really just like did anything for the badge, like he played wherever, he played at right back, he played at right wing back, he played at right wing, he played anywhere he was needed. And he did really well at right back when he started playing that position more often. Obviously always had this level of confidence, because you know, when you're going into a Champions League final, spinning the ball on your finger in a penalty shootout to win, you know what I mean? There must be some level of like, give no, you know what. But yeah, my love for him has grown over the past couple of years. And this year, especially, he, as we know, has developed the nickname, Cafucas Vasquez. And he just, yeah. He's one of those players now that you can count on consistently to come in, to be the fresh legs, to be the engine, to be like the, you can always expect crosses in the box from Lucas Vasquez, or the continuous. He's kind of like, I say this with like a grain of salt. He has the same kind of lungs as Fede Valverde. Like, the dude never stops running. He's always moving up the pitch, down the pitch. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, he really takes care of himself too, like from a physical level too.
Yeah, yeah. But the confidence level, I don't know. I don't know. It maybe comes down to mentality, because he's a player that is happy with his role. Like, he's happy being on the bench. He's happy coming in and having those moments. I'm sure he's really happy now being talked about as much as he is. But when you can step up for Real Madrid, not once, but twice, in a penalty shootout, and have the first time be spinning the ball on your finger and the second time be juggling the ball on your foot in a Champions League quarterfinal and a Champions League final to win your team the game. Like, no, it's insane. It has to be studied, I would say, because I've not seen confidence like that in a penalty shootout really from many other players at all.
No, and the thing is,
and he's
like,
33.
Well, the thing with him is that it's like it's a true, authentic confidence and not a fake confidence. Like, it's one thing to be like, all right, guys, I got this, I'm going to step up. But that doesn't mean just because you outwardly say that you can actually manifest true confidence and feel that way internally. He gathers the whole team before the penalty shootout starts and you remember to the point where like Cruz was like looking at him and almost laughing, like, and he was getting everyone together. At that point, Cruz had been subbed off. Vinny had been subbed off. Our penalties have been ass all season. And then Modric misses the first penalty, which was unthinkable for me. And I was like, how do we dig ourselves out of this? Bellingham's the only one who can step up and actually hit them now. And so, I mean, that's another thing. Like, we won the penalty shootout with two defenders taking one and then Lucas Vazquez. Like, Bellingham, obviously.
Bellingham,
And he just walks up and he hits it and he strikes it with supreme confidence. And they're both impressive, don't get me wrong. But to me, this one is actually more impressive than the one in the final. I don't know what it was about that Atletico final penalty shootout. I was oddly at ease during that one. I don't know why. I just felt like we had enough. Like, we just had so much talent. We could put all our penalties away. With this one, I was super nervous because I knew this was not our strong suit at this point of the season right now. Like, and I was really worried and I was super nervous, but it was just incredible. I was mind blown. What these guys have, like the character of this team is absolutely incredible. We have some super chats and wanted to ask you about some other things as well. So why don't we get the super chats? And then I want to ask you about this cool thing you did recently. So Ramke says, it's funny that Laporta wants a rematch, but never mentions the need for goal line tech. Give them a rematch at the end of the season. Let them do the guard of honor. So we didn't talk about this. There were two quotes that came out like after the game that I thought both were parody. Like initially I thought it was like a parody account or something. One was Xavi, you know, cause Xavi, like every single time he says we play better, we deserve to win. So like it has become a meme, right? But, but out of all times to say that, like I don't know if even dominated is the right word, but like it was very clear who was the better team. Like it's not really up for debate. We had better chances. We had more chances. We were just more threatening. Okay. So that was one thing you said that was ridiculous. The Laporta one was crazy. It's like, do you guys have any self-awareness, any self-reflection, anything like anything going on? Or maybe they do, but this is just a distraction away from their problems to get the public talking about something else, which in that case, I suppose, fair game. But I said this on Twitter. I was like, this is the more that Barca has figures like this at their club, just self-implosion. You said earlier, Leah, that like one of the good things about Real Madrid right now, there is not that drama. Like we don't have that drama.
Yeah.
Growing up, like it's actually a stark contrast to what it was like growing up with the Galacticos. Now there was drama every day. Every day there was drama. But there hasn't been drama at this club really for almost a decade, probably.
Yeah.
You know, there's been moments here and there that you're like, okay, well, like Bale and Hazard like had their moments or whatever. But largely speaking, it's been pretty smooth sailing. So it's just, I don't know what to say.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The thing is... No, go ahead, sorry.
I was going to ask you, like... Would you give them a rematch just as a joke? Like here, and then we'd like field our Castilla team.
Oh my God, can you imagine? Like a pickup match. Rematch at like.
And it's like, it's a win-win situation because if you lose, then they will celebrate that as a trophy and you just laugh about it.
Yeah.
And if you win, literally. It's like, well, here's your rematch.
The thing is, it's just the irony of it is so funny. And to, as Laporta to come out and like make a full statement, because I think during the, I don't know, I saw something on Twitter. I don't know. I was streaming at the time, so I don't know if it was a parody or not, but he mentioned something defending his choice to reject.
Oh, I didn't see
goal
that.
Line technology. Mm-hmm. And so that, and then this video that we've all seen on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's ironic. Like it's the, like you said, it's the self-awareness. Like it makes no sense. First of all, these things happen in football all the time. You know what I mean? Things should, how many times, and regardless of the team that you support, we've had situations where we're like, this is a clear goal. Like, this is a clear penalty. This should have stood. That wasn't offside. Whatever, whatever, whatever. You know what I mean? Never want, you would not catch Florentino Perez dead making a statement or a video like the one that he did, especially if there's no real like evidence or proof that it was or it wasn't. We all have eyes, you know, like we all have our opinions. We can see what it was. But in that circumstance, like, again, physics is a real thing. Science is a real thing. And there's been goals called off, I'm sure, for Barcelona, but in the World Cup, Spain versus Japan, there was one that was like millimeters. There was one in the Women's World Cup too, I think, that like, when you look at it from straight on, it's over the line, but from a bird's eye view, there's still like some of the ball because the ball's round, and it's just, yeah. So it's that, and then the fact that him himself like literally rejected the use or the idea of the use of goal line technology in La Liga. So it's just, it's iron. It's like karma almost, you know. Real Madrid was one of the clubs that was for goal line technology. And I think Bilbao was another one that later came on board. But for me, there's no reason that you don't have goal line technology, you know, as one of the biggest leagues in Europe. Like, it makes no sense unless you're used to, you know, getting your way with things, and that would kind of obliterate the able to question decisions on field. So,
well, I've seen Kool-Aid come on and say like, well, the reason we had to vote against goal line tech was because if we didn't, we, you know, Tebas wouldn't let us do this financial fair play stuff and get out of this mess. I'm like, well, dude, those are your own bad decisions from the past that you have to deal with now. That's not like anybody's fault but your own. And, but like I said, like, these are all things that I think are good for Real Madrid fans, unless you want Barca to be good and competent for the sake of the league. But if you just don't care and you're just happy to see them melt down, I think you just want more figures like Xavi and Laporta, and like, less players, like less figures like Gundogan, because Gundogan is the one guy who comes out and is like, guys, can we stop talking about this ref? We made a bad Araujo, like, you fucked up. Like, you should not have been making that challenge. And then Araujo coming out and saying like he should not have said that publicly, and you know, like, you can tell
they,
like,
don't deserve Gundo.
They don't deserve Gundo. I feel like there is definitely a lack of self-reflection going on there and happening, and just kind of playing the victim card, which is ironic because all they do is yell about Vinicius playing the victim card, and literally that's all that Barca is doing right now. But I think what something that does happen in this situation is that there is a selective focus, tunnel vision, where every single thing that doesn't go their way is all that exists. Because if we're actually looking at it objectively, the Christensen goal, he just puts his hand all over Cruz's back and just jumps over him. That could have been called a foul. There was, and then there was that one Lamine Yamal dive, or I remember it was a dive where he tripped over himself. Isn't that the one where Camavinga gets a yellow card, or was that a different?
Exactly that.
And like, to me, this is my whole thing. It's like, the referees just suck. And like, everyone thinks that it's the referees are screwing their own team over. When not, they're not realizing, like, if you just watch like a random match like between Mallorca and Getafe, the referee is screwing both those teams too in that game. But no one will talk about it because it's like Mallorca and Getafe. But I think where it gets dangerous is that fans just think it's an attack on their team, and they don't realize that like, this is just the fact that there's no goal line technology is bad for everybody. Like, you know.
And no
Real Madrid fan would disagree with that. Like, there should have been goal line technology. And if it was a goal, then Barcelona should have been given that goal. No one really knows. No one really has proof. There's like four different outlets, publications, and TV companies that have put out 3D images that are saying it was not a goal. I don't think I've seen anyone say that it was a definitive goal.
Except for there's one Barca account that's like, it was a goal, and then it got community noted.
Incredible.
Incredible. But it's the same thing like pre-VAR. You know what I mean? There were decisions that were made that for goals that were offside and goals that weren't like the opposite as well for goals that counted that should have been offside. And that's why VAR was introduced, to eliminate the, you know, the confusion of whether or not a goal was offside. So it's the same with goal line technology. If your club voted against goal line technology because you didn't want it, then you have to deal with those consequences at that point. The referee made the decision. It was VAR'd. And ultimately, because there was not enough evidence to prove that it was or was not a goal, they had to go with the on-field decision from the referee, which was no goal.
All right. Mahdi Elabdaloui says, if we win the double, will Carlo have surpassed Zidane's managerial legacy at the club? How would you compare the three-peat versus Carlo's three potential Champions League titles?
That's tough. Because a three-peat, I think, like, at this point, is more difficult than a treble. And a three-peat, like, it's been proven. No one's done it since. You know what I mean? Manchester City super team wasn't able to even do a double. Like, they weren't even able to go back-to-back. They weren't even able to get in a semifinal in the year after. You know what I mean? So I think the three-peat as a whole is just an achievement that, like, even us as Real Madrid fans, I think, like, we not, I don't want to say underrate, but, like, I still think we don't necessarily know the magnitude of what that accomplishment was, going back to back to back. So I think because Zidane was the manager during that three-peat, I think there'll always be that kind of legacy there for him. But I mean, Carlo got us our decima. That was like the beginning. That was the turnaround for us in the Champions League. You know what I mean? We'd gone 11, 12 years without a Champions League, and that was like the beginning of this new era. See what I did there? and then to come back and win two in a matter of 3 years, I think is still an achievement. Two doubles at that, not just two Champions Leagues. I don't know. That's a tough question. It's tough. I think if we won a treble, I would say yeah. I would say for sure. Like, two Champions Leagues in 3 years, including a treble and La Decima. But I don't know if you can, I don't know if you can beat, let me say this, as a manager, this might be a hot take, I don't know, maybe not. As a manager, I actually prefer Ancelotti to Zidane, just because Zidane was a little more stubborn, in the sense of, Ancelotti's stubborn too, but I think that Zidane was almost borderline like favoritist, like he would really have his favorites and play them. Granted, that was our best era. Like, we had our 11 and our 11. I saw a picture on Twitter today that was the same 11 that we started in 16-17 or 17-18. But something like that. It was the exact same. I like Ancelotti's approach to management a little bit more. I think that he has the tactical side, he knows what he's doing. He's won the most Champions Leagues as a manager. But I like his man-managing approach as well, where he gives players freedom. I just, in terms of management style, I prefer Ancelotti. But I don't know if his accomplishments in his tenure, both then and now, will surpass a three-peat. I think that's a crazy, crazy accomplishment when you really deep it.
Yeah, interesting. I think if you put Zidane's team versus Ancelotti's team, which is like, it's kind of fuzzy, like, what is Ancelotti's team? But let's like pretend, I don't know, like Ancelotti's current team. Let's say take from the 2 years, so you can pick from Benzema too. And you put the two teams against each other, I think Zidane's Real Madrid would win. But I also think that is actually gives Carlo some bonus points, because the last two years, he didn't have the squad Zidane had. And I think that, to me, like, if he wins another Champions League title, which actually it would be one another Champions League title and counting, because Ancelotti's not going anywhere. Plus Mbappe is coming next year. So it's like, this is a weird one, because like usually when you're like talking about your 12th semifinal appearance in 14 years, plus all these Champions League titles, you're talking about, like, okay, this is coming to an end soon. Like most of our team is super young, and we got Mbappe coming. It's like, okay, so maybe it's like just
and Endrick.
And Endrick.
I think that So I was just gonna say that it's like we're almost in like a borderline rebuild era. You know what I mean? Especially as our midfield is kind of slowly, like we talked about this last time. It's slowly a transition breaking apart, but at the same time, exactly. So to be able to win Champions League in a transition time, like look at all the other teams, Barcelona, Manchester United, like all of these teams that are crumbling at its core during these transition eras, we're not, we're doing the opposite. We're winning trophies. I think if Carlo next year wins the Champions League again, like does a double or does a wins the Champions League again and does two back to back, then I would say, yeah, could be.
I think you could argue, assuming this is like, maybe we should stop. Like, I feel like this entire podcast has been jinxing. Like, we've been like, we should play Bayern twice, and then there's a final if we beat them. But these are all just assumptions at this point. It's the question that came to us, right? So, but assuming Carlo would win this year's Champions League, I think you could argue while the three-peat was pretty much unreplicable and unparalleled, because no one else has ever done it, like apart from Di Stefano's Real Madrid, which went five in a row. You could argue Carlo's were more momentous and more difficult, because he brought La Decima, which was a 12-year wait, and then 2022, which was like historic because it was underdog punching above its weight. And then, you know, whatever this year might end up being. So you could argue that Carlo's were more difficult. Having said that, I think he will surpass Zidane's legacy, because he's not done yet. Unless Zidane comes back in like 5 years and then he goes on another run, you know, and then it's just never ending.
Imagine another three people from Zidane.
Crazy. Do you think Zidane will come back or he's done here?
I think he's done. I think he has a similar mentality to Cruz. Like, I think that's why he left both times voluntarily. When he did was because it's just, he wants to maintain his, it's the same with like, I talked about this on stream the other day. It's the same with Lampard. It's the same with Xavi, honestly. Like, you also, there's a level that you don't want to pass where it starts affecting your legacy with the club as a player as well. You know what I mean? Like, if you're so bad, I'm not saying that Zidane was ever so bad. Of course not. But, like, if he goes through some consecutive years of no success, then eventually, like Xavi, for example, the more this happens, like, it's eventually people are going to remember that rather than his actual, like what kind of player he actually was and his player legacy.
This is the classic Batman. If you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become a villain. This kind of happened to Casillas and Raul, actually.
But
I do think over the long run, like the historians looking back will remember the good stuff only or mostly.
Of course.
Yeah.
The unbiased ones, definitely. Not the social media fake fans. They won't. I think that he's like Cruz in that sense, where he wants to retire on top. He wants to have both, like, you know, the success as a player and as a manager, and then leave it at that and move on to the next challenge. I don't think it's Xabi Alonso next for me. I think that's what's best, and I think it will happen.
The great thing about Xavi, like, apart from the fact that he's still undefeated, is, like, they just have the same Real Madrid DNA. It's, like, 98th minute, you know, they're keeping the streak alive over and over again. All right. Just a shout-out to our new member, the Agra. Welcome to the family. Fuego says, glad you got to experience City's downfall live. Do you have a day in the life / behind the scenes video like last season, Hala Madrid? No, I don't. This year I didn't do any of that extra behind the scenes stuff because I just wanted to enjoy it and not have to kind of work behind the scenes. Mr. Sushi 22 says, any concerns about Bayern Munich? Kane is looking dangerous.
No, here's the thing. I think it's a fabulous European matchup. I think it's like one of the ones that, as a football fan, it's a good tie. Like, it's a good matchup. We've, you know, won against Bayern several times. We've lost against Bayern. So I don't think necessarily it'll be easy as people think. It's a possibility that it could actually be more difficult than City, in the sense of they're just different. They're a different team. Kane's dangerous. They have a bunch of tricky attackers, lots of pace on the wings. Musiala is, of course, you know, very creative and very dangerous in the midfield. But I think, again, we've had enough experience against Bayern, against a lot of these players play with each other. So I think that'll go a long way. Kane doesn't, it's the same. I mean, Kane is Kane. Do you know what I mean? Kane is Kane. But Kane doesn't have the pace. It's a similar, here's, okay. I'm thinking out loud here. It's a similar idea in the sense that what's different between Kane and Haaland, for example, is Haaland is a striker, like straight up target man. Kane, in the last few years, has changed. He's adapted a lot to him getting slower and being a little more injury prone. Like, he's not as much of a, he's more of a center forward now, you know, he's a little more creative. It's the same at Tottenham. Like, he played that deeper, you know, number center forward kind of role where he would. So I think in that sense, it's very different than what we're used to playing in La Liga. But I don't know. Like, I think that I would be more concerned about like Sané and Gnabry and the pacey wingers rather than Kane. I think that Rudiger probably has Kane locked up.
Yeah, like, all the concerns I had about City, I just think City is like a better version of Bayern, right? And when you think about their interchangeability and the players who can kind of hurt us, I will say this about Bayern, because the one thing about City, which makes them really weird and like, I think it's something that they need to improve on personally, is that they don't really have enough unpredictability and line breaking. Like, when Grealish gets the ball, he's going to pretend to take on Carvajal 10 times and then just pass it backwards.
Yeah.
And like, when Doku came in, I think Carvajal defended Doku well. But yeah. I also thought that he was at least a little bit more proactive in trying to create danger.
Yeah.
And when you think about players like Musiala and Sané, like, they will do that, I think, a little bit more unpredictably and less robotically than a lot of City's possession.
Agreed.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get the whole band together with Workday and pair finance and HR on one platform for an epic performance. With Workday AI at the core, you'll make confident decisions faster than ever, and you'll drive flawless business and finance operations with an agile platform that constantly evolves to future-proof your organization. Be a finance and HR rockstar with Workday. Visit workday.com to learn more.
But it's like always a bloodbath with Bayern. Like, it's always, it's going to be tight, I think. And I think it's going to be pretty grueling at times to watch. And Kane is someone, because of his profile, I think might actually be a bit more difficult to a difficult matchup than Haaland would be. Because he's a bit more mobile, right? He can play outside the box.
I also think that the one thing that I do think is that what comes with the experience in the Champions League is the ability to, like, I don't think we're going to go into this game as other clubs maybe will go into this game. Like, if City went through, for example, what we've seen in the past is going up against a team that they think they're stronger than and feeling a lot more at ease. You know what I mean? Like, Real Madrid has a mentality to go into this game as a final. And I think that that will help, because although I do think Real Madrid currently are better than Bayern currently, in terms of form, other teams go into it thinking this is easy, like we've got this, and then end up making dumb mistakes or end up conceding or end up just like not playing with the same amount of, like, do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, they it's the mentality. So I think that that will take us a long way. Tuchel is, he's a tricky manager. So
for us, he's been pretty tricky.
Even with Chelsea. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting.
How much are you looking at Davies in the, over these two games, and like looking at this as a tryout? Because his stock is actually pretty low right now. He's not playing that well. Bayern fans are pretty fed up with him. And like, if it goes poorly against us, like, does that just basically, does this sway us one way or the other, do you think?
I think it'll sway fans for sure. But I think if we're looking at Alphonso Davies, Florentino Perez has counted his stocks and put them aside likely for many years. So I don't think it'll affect any kind of decision in that sense. However, I'm more thinking about Mendy and his future, because listen, if you asked me after the friendly against Juventus in preseason, I would have told you get Mendy out of this club immediately.
Wow, I don't remember anything that happened in that game. Juventus in the preseason? What happened? Did we lose?
We lost against Juventus, but he like gave the ball away because he tripped over himself. It was the most ridiculous, like, and then several weeks after, before his injury, basically, he was just like not amazing. You know what I mean? He made dumb mistakes. He lost possession. Even defensively, he was struggling. Like, it was a whole, but then he got injured. He came back. And now I'm like, okay. I think Alphonso Davies is a completely different defender. Alphonso Davies is what we're typically used to having in a defender, I would say, like more attacking, more overlapping. Mendy's not really that. However, I do feel like he's gotten better. Also playing against or playing on the same side as Vinny, is a plus. Like, I think if there was a winger that wasn't necessarily as pacey, as tricky, as attacking, then, you know, it would be different. But we do have, and even in the system that we set up against City, with Rodrigo on the left and Vinny in the front, like, they've got that side covered. You know what I mean? So Mendy can really focus on what he does best. But yeah, no, now I'm pleasantly surprised with Mendy and his performance.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've flip-flopped on Mendy so many times. Mm-hmm. But I feel like for good reason. Like, he just hasn't, first of all, he has not been healthy. And then when he gets healthy, he needs a few games to get into rhythm, and he doesn't play that well. But what I've seen of late, I'm like, there's no way I'm selling this guy. No way.
Yeah.
He is just too good and too important in those big games where you really need a defensive presence. Okay. Like, that's fine. Like, I don't really even think or care too much about those games in La Liga where, like, you know, but like, In games in La Liga at home, for example, you can get away with someone attacking, like Davies, for example, right?
Yeah.
It's the big Champions League games I'm thinking about. Like, that guy just locked down. In 2022, he knocked down everyone he faced, whether it was Salah, whether it was Mahrez, and you think back to his goal line clearance. And this year, he was incredible against City over two legs. So I'm not selling this guy, which means if you're making room for Davies, you have to get rid of Fran Garcia, which, okay.
Yeah.
But But I really don't know. Like, this is the one thing that's been overlooked with the whole Davies thing, is that Real Madrid need to get rid of one of those contracts.
Yeah.
To make room for Davies.
Uh-huh. And I don't know. The fullback situation in general. Also, it might have been the Clásico in preseason. It was one of them. But regardless, we lost and it was his fault. But yeah, the fullback season, or the fullback situation in general, is just up in arms. Even last year, I was like, okay, well, we definitely need a right back. And this year, I'm like, where did this reincarnation of Carvajal come from? Like,
yeah,
the gluten, that's where it came from. But like, I'd be if Carvajal had this level for the next like 2 years, I'd be more than happy to keep him. And then transition another right back slowly, like we've done with the midfield. I don't know. Like, this is a thing.
Yeah.
Like,
no, for sure. Yeah. But I think, Leah, it's kind of a thing that the way you're wording it too also just tells me that it's not that urgent, right? Like, no. We have players right now. And so it might be better to just wait and find the right guy rather than forcing someone to come in right now. Like, all these guys we've signed of late, whether it was Jude or Tchouameni and Kamavinga, we didn't sign them out of desperation. We signed them because they were the right guy. And like, whenever that right person comes along, I'm just at a point where whatever Juni Khalifat does, I trust him. Like, the guy is paying on. He's got like a 99% track record for everything.
Yeah, and it'll be Jeremy Frimpong with Xabi Alonso in 2026. And that is my prediction.
It's a good shout. One more super chat from Mr. Sushi. He says, maybe Militao plays right back versus Bayern. I don't see it. Not with the form Carvajal and Vasquez are in.
No. And also coming back from injury and not having the minutes, the confidence, the like playing experience for almost an entire season, I don't think they'll come in and put him in out of position. They would have done that on against City in extra time when Lucas Vasquez came on, if that was an option. But however, what I'll say is that I've thought about this because Militao, like at Porto, was a right back. So he has the experience at right back. He has the pace. And also he has like the ball carrying ability. He has the accuracy in passing. So I don't necessarily, listen, pre-Alaba injury, when we were kind of trying to decide what to do, like as fans, with our center back situation, that's what I was thinking. I was like, well, Militao, we could have all three, Alaba, Rudiger, and Militao on the right, because last year Carvajal's form was but now I think that the center back pairing has to be Rudiger Militao, has to be.
Well, I guess the interesting thing about this, I mean, and with the Militao thing, just to piggyback off that, I actually liked him in the World Cup because he played there for Brazil in the World Cup, and he was better than I thought he was going to be. His defense on the flank is really good, and the one thing where you can kind of see some weaknesses is that if he like makes this marauding, like if he has to like make an overload and put a cross in from the right back position, that's not his strong suit, but his long range passing is good from that position, and his defending is, it would be more of a defensive kind of play if you're going to do that. If, because Carvajal is going to be back for the second leg, he's suspended for the first leg.
Yeah.
Which means we're going to have Vasquez and Fede versus Davies and Musiala. So it's going to, I think, there's going to be a lot of onus on Fede to help defensively in that game, especially because that one's in Munich too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too. And to be honest, I think it's a good game for Lucas Vasquez to start after. Even just the media, like everything that's happened, his performance, but then also like the attention that he's been getting, I think his confidence must be like, at an all-time high. Playing at the Bernabeu for the second leg too, I think is really beneficial.
Yeah.
This is the sound of your engine getting clean. Because BP and Amoco gasolines with Invigorate clean deep in your engine as you drive, helping your car run better to take you farther. Fuel a cleaner engine with BP and Amoco gasolines with Invigorate at a station near you. Optimizes your engine's performance from the harmful effects of deposits caused by minimum detergent fuels. Requires continuous use. Results depend on what you drive and how you drive. Comparison made for fuels with the same ethanol content.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
So let's close with this. Recently, you got a chance to interview Jude Bellingham. That came out of nowhere. You just kind of dropped it on us like the day you were doing it, I think. And if you did advertise it before, I didn't see it. I don't think you did.
No.
Right. So how did that happen?
So I was in Spain on vacation. I was in Malaga, and I had an Instagram message from someone that I'd worked with previously. Tops worked with Champions League, Champions League last year. So we were all at the, same event. And he sent me a message saying, "Hey, I saw you were in Spain. Like, I was wondering if you wanted to come to this event and interview Jude." Well, first he said, "And meet Jude Bellingham, and, you know, for content, whatever." And I was like, "What do you mean? I was wondering if you want me to come to, like, are you in?" "Yes, 1000%. I was like, "I'll be there." So I booked the train. I went, and on my way that day, they were like, "Oh, hey, I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but they're like, we need someone to interview him, like, last minute. Do you want to do?" Like, I was like, first of all, yes, 1,000 times, 1,000,000, immediately yes, you know. But then I was like, it was excitement, and then immediately after, I was like, oh my god, like, what? It's one thing to interview a footballer, but, like, it's another thing to interview, like, the biggest footballer in the world right now that plays for your club. You know what I mean? So I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. Like, I literally am gonna die. What am I gonna ask him? What am I gonna do? So it all happened so fast. I blacked out for everything. But it was really cool. He's so nice. Like, so humble.
Yes.
So friendly. So professional. His mom, power woman, like, intimidating, like, crazy, but super nice. That's the thing. It all happened literally, like, I got that DM 2 days before I went to Madrid, like, 2 days before I booked my train. So
you were already going to Madrid?
No, but
you were like,
Madrid.
Yeah. This is this is the benefit of being flexible. Like, oh yeah, I'll be there. Yeah, no problem. I'm there already. Yeah.
And it's an easy train. It was a couple hours, you know, the trains in Spain are really good. So I was like, immediately yes. And I was doing nothing. I was just literally, like, sitting in the sun in Malaga, and that's it. So yeah, I didn't even, like, I had no time to even think or prepare or anything. So I went to Madrid, did the thing. It was a blur. Like, it was all a blur. He's very tall. I asked him a question. There was a lot of questions that were from, like, basically the event was there were winners that found a gold card, like a gold Jude Bellingham card, in a pack of, like, Topps cards. And if they found the gold card, that means they won this trip to Spain to meet Jude Bellingham. So they had questions that basically I asked him on their behalf, but then I had a couple of my own. And one of the ones, I posted a tweet, I think, and took some of those questions. But one of the ones I asked him was, if you were stranded on a desert island, which one of your teammates would you want to be stranded with and why? And he said, definitely not Camavinga. Absolutely not. He talks way too much. I would be annoyed in 5 seconds. And I was like, okay. And he's like, I really like to sleep. So I was like, okay. He's like, I need someone chill. And I was like, okay. It's like, I think maybe Tchouaméni. Like, he's pretty chill. You know, it's good vibes. I was like, oh, does he also like to sleep? And then he's like, He's like, yeah, I think so. And I was like, oh, nice. All you guys will do a sleep then. He's like, yeah, not together. I was like, no, that's not what I didn't say that. You said that. What do you mean? And that caught me off guard because I'm like still also trying to be professional. You know what I mean? Well, fangirling to the maximum degree inside. And yeah. I'm like, no, of course not. Like, what? You know? So it was good. It was really funny. And he was super nice. My friend Lucy came with me and we got our kit signed and took some pictures. So I still have a few. I still have a few that I haven't posted yet. So that's
a few, what, come, a few pictures,
photos. Yeah. There's an right. interview, but I don't know much about it because it wasn't.
Well, this is what I was going to ask you because I don't think we ever got like quotes from the interview that I can remember. I mean, everything's a blur because there's so much news every day, but I don't remember if we got like quotes from that Leah interview. So I was curious.
No. I haven't seen it either. So I'm not sure. I've been thinking actually over the last few weeks that I should send a message to the person that reached out to me and ask like, when is this going to air? Because I want to see it.
Yeah.
I want to see how fangirl I actually looked in real life. You know what I mean?
So it's not aired yet. I guess that's the.
I don't think so.
They were non-time sensitive questions probably.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, they weren't. But yeah, I haven't, if it is aired, I haven't seen it, or heard anything about it, but I don't think it's aired yet.
That's super cool. Super cool.
It was insane. Yeah, it was insane. Yeah. I left being like, what on earth just happened? Like yesterday I was in this morning I was in Malaga. You know what I mean? I was just going to go about my weekend, go to the beach, go get a coffee. That's what I was doing. And then it was insane. Insane. Nice guy though. Very nice guy.
He's incredible. Like it's truly incredible. I mean, I've never had a chance to speak to him directly. I've been in the mix zone with him once in the summer, the preseason that you hate. and then in the press conference at the Etihad, and that was it. But like, just even at the Etihad, like the first thing he did when he sat down the press conference, he was like, hello, everyone. I'm very nervous for this. I'm more nervous for this than the actual game. And
I saw that clip.
Yeah, just super, super likable guy. Okay. I wanted to ask you this. How do I play against you in FIFA? Like, what do I need? A PlayStation, an Xbox, a PC? How does that happen?
Either. All of the above.
Okay. I don't have a PS5. I have a PS4. Do I need a PS5?
That's fine.
Really?
No. It's crossplay. And I think the game is really cheap and if not free right now. I'm not 100% sure.
Why?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you have FIFA? I mean FC?
FC. Not the newest one. I have the 2020. Yeah. 22 was the last one I bought.
Oh, wow. That's some years ago.
I know. I fell off.
No, I think that it should be... I fell off. Stop. It should be, like, cheap, like half price or free at some point. I don't know if it'll ever be free. I don't know.
I don't care if it's free or whatever. I just like I was just curious because I wanted to set up one Twitch stream where I just want to see how I just want to see what my level is compared to you.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
Okay.
Yeah. It for sure. It's like the game is like $80, like $100 if it's not on sale. So
right now you're saying there's a deal. Is that what you're saying?
For sure. I would say let me check on the PlayStation Store. Well, I'll let you know. I'll check after and I'll
I have PS Plus.
Ooh, then it might be even included in the you can get like it's like the Xbox Game Pass situation.
Okay.
We'll
figure it out. We'll
for sure
it out.
It's discounted. Yeah, we'll figure it out, but that'll be fun. We should do that. We should set that up.
Awesome. I'm glad you were able to do this. And I knew that we had a ton to talk about because we had an amazing week. I wanted to, and I mean, this goes back all the way to your Jude interview. I was like, okay, I got to talk to Leah about that for sure. And maybe we can reconvene. Are you going to be in the Champions League final? Because don't you go to that?
Should be.
Okay.
I think so.
Maybe something in London. Who knows?
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Hold on. We do have, one more super chat. We'll close with this one.
Cool.
Himshahar says, should we sell Courtois, get decent money for him, and invest that in our fullback and another young goalkeeper, love from India?
It's hard to say. I think this is premature. I think that Lunin, listen, I'm on the Lunin. I've been on the Lunin train for years. Like, I have said for at least 3 years that he deserves his chance. He deserves his, you know, ability to prove himself. And even in, like, you know, what other clubs do often is in Europe, there's a different goalkeeper, or just for like domestic cups, there's a different goalkeeper getting some sort of minutes. But Courtois has been in such good form that it's made it really hard to rotate goalkeepers. But in the performances that we have seen from Lunin previously, like, he was always solid, always. And I had always said, if he gets the opportunity to just have playing experience and get minutes and just prove himself, he'd be unstoppable. And sure enough, and I love him. And I think definitely Courtois back in training. I think that Lunin should still finish the season. He deserves it. He's earned his spot at this point. Even signing Kepa, I think, was kind of a slap in the face for him, because that should have been his moment. But all that adversity, and he still come out on top. But Courtois is still Courtois. I think maybe one more season. I think now Real Madrid are more keen to keep Lunin, and Lunin is more keen to stay, because now he knows that the club knows what he's capable of and what he can do. And I think it'll depend on Courtois' form next season when he comes back. Like, there could be a possibility he comes back from injury, not just one, but two injuries on two separate knees now. And he's not the same, you know? I'm not a goalkeeper, so I don't know exactly how much ACLs and that will affect goalkeepers compared to outfield players. But yeah, there could be a possibility that he just, like, Lunin overtakes Courtois and maintains his spot next season. And in that case, I don't know, we have two of the best, like, Lunin has the best record in La Liga right now, and Courtois. So having both, I think, would be great. I don't know if either of them at that point would be happy. So one of them would inevitably leave, I would assume. But yeah, I think it's premature to sell Courtois at this point. It would at least wait till the end of next season to start thinking about
that. Yeah, I agree. I'm not selling Courtois. I also, because I'm kind of like a sentimental person in these situations.
Yeah.
I believe in some cases you should not be ruthless and think only about business when it comes to players like that who have earned so much.
And like Navas. Yeah.
Poor Keylor Navas. Although Zidane was huge in defending him and keeping him. Because remember when Kepa nearly came when he was with us.
Yeah. Athletic.
One thing about Kepa, like, it was worth it just alone for him telling Lunin that Bernardo Silva was going to shoot down the middle. It was worth it.
Yeah.
The whole Lunin moment was worth it for that one moment.
Yeah.
Could have literally bringing Kepa in the summertime literally could have been the difference between making it to the semifinal or not. Isn't that crazy to think about? Awesome. Leah, thanks so much for hopping on the podcast. It's always a pleasure having you on. For our listeners, so you know, the next two podcasts, which are Wednesday and Thursday, are only for members. So we're doing a mailbag tomorrow, Lucas and I, and then on Wednesday we got like, or on Thursday we got like four of the crew on to talk about more Real Madrid stuff. That's over on patreon.com/managingmadrid, or if you're watching this on YouTube, just hit join underneath this video and you'll get access to the content. Leah, where can people find you?
Leah Ravel on all socials.
Easy. All right.
Easy.
Brilliant. Thanks guys for tuning in live. And Leah, thank you so much for your time. And
thank you.
Chat soon. Take care. Peace.
Ciao. Woo.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.